What's good, y'all, and welcome to the Snooze Button Wake Up Weekly Variety Show. Welcome back if you're returning. Welcome if you're new. There's a lot of places you could be spending your time right now, and I appreciate you spending it with me. What's good, y'all? It's your boy, Brandon, Brand New Stevens. You are listening to the Snooze Button Wake Up Variety Show. It is Thursday, June 11th, 2020, and this truly will be a variety show. There's so much going on in the world. There's so much going on internally in my own life. So many transitions, so many changes. I feel like daily I'm waking up to realizations of things that I used to hold to be true, that are up for revision, things that I thought I knew about myself, things that I never thought to be true about myself. A veil is being thinned, a veil is being lifted, and I feel as if I'm seeing things clearly, more clearly. I feel more and more my true self, who I really am. Comfortable in my own skin, seeing what my true north is, seeing where I am willing to fight, seeing areas in my life that I am willing to take a stand for and defend with intelligence and love from the heart. I've noticed myself wrestle with logic. I've noticed myself this past week caught up in a bit of mob mentality. I've observed myself and allowed whatever was there to be there. And we're all at such an interesting place right now where it's okay to own up to mistakes. Like the environment and the temperature right now collectively in our culture is like, it's cool to grow. Like, it's cool to be like, damn, you know what? My bad. I didn't know. Like, it's cool to learn right now. It's cool to revisit positions that you held near and dear, because maybe they weren't really even your positions in the first place. Maybe that was some conditioning and some programming passed down to you through decades of parenting. And when you actually observe your thinking and take a step back from it and look at it from a different angle, you might say, wow, that's actually not what I hold true. And when I look at it through my own eyes with a fresh heart in the present moment, wow, actually, I think I'm gonna start to learn a little bit more about this. And wow, there's some stuff here present within me that's uncomfortable, but you know, I'm not afraid to deal with it. So like, that's cool. It's a good environment right now. I like that. But that being said, this particular episode of the Snooze Button Wake Up Show is going to be all over the place, because that's how I feel right now. I'm a bit all over the place. So, thanks for tuning in, y'all. And now, for a segment I like to call, I thought this was funny at the time, but it's probably offensive to somebody now, so my bad. Enjoy. Yeah, you know, it's 2020, and like, we've tried this whole, you know, everybody riding the same buses and all people of all color going to school together in the same classrooms and everybody drinking from the same water fountain. I think it's safe to say that shit's just not working. It's kind of, that ship has set sail. I mean, we tried, and back to the drawing board. So in 2020, I think I'm proposing a new form of segregation. I think segregation in 2020 is the way. And not in like a you're less than us, you have to go over there type of segregation. I'm talking about like, if all you white people don't want to be around black people, then that's fine. You just go over there then. Have some area.
Let's make a whole racist compound, like a reservation, like a Native American reservation. Let's have a safe haven where racists can be racist and they can hate people of other colors, but no people of other colors will be around. So they can just hate them at their white power barbecues and they can just hate them at their white power rallies, but there will not be a black person for miles to see because all of the white people that hate black people will just go somewhere else. It's fantastic. And also, really, let's enough with drinking from the same water fountains. Like, do you really want to drink water from a person that hates black people? Do you want to drink water after a racist? No, let's have racist water fountains and non-racist water fountains. And the non-racist water fountains, people of all colors can drink from. But the racist water fountains, well, people of all colors can drink from also. But that water fountain is for people that hate other races. So segregated water fountains, same deal with the buses, same deal with the classrooms. Segregation in 2020.
And see, that's the thing. I don't even know what's funny anymore. Like, I'm realizing that all of my humor, the majority of it, is either A, based on somebody getting hurt, you know, trip and fall humor, getting kicked in the nuts humor, I love ridiculousness, all that stuff. Or it's based on some type of a racial stereotype or an ethnic stereotype or some type of well-known sexism stereotype. Like, I'm noticing a whole lot of like, get in the kitchen and make me a sandwich type humor. Or like, I don't smell no dinner, like to my wife joking around, but like noticing some of that's there. I remember as a Cub Scout, the earliest Cub Scout you can be, I think, my first year, not Tiger, but like one up from Tiger, maybe Wolf. I remember we had to do some type of a skit and I came up to my scout leader and I said, I do a fantastic impression of an Indian gas station owner. And I was dead ass. Like, I did a very good, my parents were laughing because I was little and in the car and I was doing the whole, like, you know, Indian accent. And I thought, you know, it was funny. You know, it was funny. Every time I went to a gas station, it was an Indian person with a turban and a dot on their head. So for me, gas stations were owned by Indian people. I learned how to do the accent and I tried to do this at a scout meeting and my scout leader was like, you absolutely cannot do a skit where you're making fun of someone's ethnicity. And I was like shocked. I had no idea what he was talking about. I was like hurt. Like I had a weird feeling in me because I was like, what? Like, no, I'm good at this accent. Like it's going to be funny. Everyone's going to like it. I didn't understand what he was saying about it being wrong because like my family and I laughed at this particular stereotype. Did we hate Indian people? No. Were we mean to them at the gas station? No. But we very much, you know, did that accent in the house. Why? I don't know. You know, these are some of the things I'm talking about. I'm noticing that's present within me. So I don't really know what's funny right now. Because no matter what angle you take, somebody's going to be offended about something. It's very, very difficult for someone not to be offended right now. I saw a perfect meme the other day, and it was like, if you say Black Lives Matter, you're pissing off a certain group. And then if you say All Lives Matter, you're pissing off a certain group. And then if you say that you're for protests, you're pissing off a certain group. But if you're against property destruction, you're against a certain group. But if you're like, it was nuts. Like, no matter where you landed on any of these subjects, it was going to piss off some group. And humor is such a deeply personal thing. What you find funny and what you find offensive, they're often, you know, a very fine line. And I don't know. I've been finding myself not wanting to even try to be funny. And that's not good. Because my sense of humor, all of our collective sense of humor is so valuable and such a gift and so important at this time. But the thing is, you know, humor at someone else's expense, humor at the expense of a collective group, you know, are we helping or are we hurting? Or are we hiding behind the humor because we don't really want to take a good, hard, long look at some of these questions, which I have my hand up, and you can call it that term everybody's saying that I can't remember right now, where the white people are just jumping on board and not really doing anything about it, virtue signaling. You can call it that if you want, but I'm putting my hand up and saying that, you know, that's been a bit of my reality. So I want to keep my sense of humor, and people are going to be offended regardless is what I'm learning. I just need to keep moving and stay in my lane. And that's what's been so nice about this veil lifting. I'm seeing what's important to me and what actually matters and what actually is worth taking a stand on. And once I found something to take a stand on and about and be true to myself with, now I can present a case against somebody in respectful discourse, but I don't really give a fuck if you disagree with me now. I'll remain open-minded and have a discussion with you, but like, if what I say, if I believe that to be my truth and it pisses you off and makes you angry, like, that's okay. When before, I would hide. I wouldn't say certain things because I just wanted to be liked by the masses. Well, now I'm losing followers on the daily on Instagram. Don't know about Facebook. Don't know if I've been blocked by anybody, but, you know, the same handful of people listen to this podcast. Thank you very much for returning each and every week. I appreciate you guys. And, you know, I'm okay with it. I'm all right with losing followers if I'm being true to myself and I'm living in a way where I have my head held high and I can meet anybody's eyes and say I'm doing my best. I don't know it all. I'm learning. I'm open-minded to the fact that you may know better than me. Help me to learn. You know? And when my ego doesn't get in the way of that, it works out really well. But I did notice myself once this past week get into a little bit of mob mentality, like I said in the intro. So weird. We were at this rally, this protest for police brutality, and I gave a speech in front of a whole crowd of people. I gave the speech that I did from last week, if you listened to that episode about my white privilege and subtle racism. Well, after that, they were addressing the police, and the police had a chance to talk, and this one dude got all up in the police chief's face and was like, you know, he's saying some good stuff, but basically we all took a knee, right? And he was like, anybody that's, you know, with us and for, like, take a knee in support of, you know, and she, like, they wouldn't take a knee, and the whole crowd started chanting to the police, take a knee, take a knee. Like, and I started chanting, take a knee. Like, at first I was like, come on. Like, I was cheering for her, like, take a knee. Like, this is gonna be great for the crowd. Like, everybody's gonna love it. It's gonna be a show of solidarity. Like, come on, take a knee. I was chanting an encouragement. Well, that slowly, as she wouldn't take a knee, that switched over to like, take a knee, take a knee, take a knee, take a knee. Take a knee! Like, I saw myself for a fraction of a second get lost up into, like, this, like, mob mentality. And I was like, whoa. Like, it was, I was like, all right, that's cool. Enough of that. Like, wow. Like, the police were there walking and talking and listening. Like, they must have had a meeting beforehand about, like, listen, we're not going to kneel. I don't know. Whatever they chose not to kneel was their thing. But my response to it was the only thing I could take notice of, and I see that. It's craziness. That's not something that I wish to get lost in, regardless of how emotional I may feel from viewing certain images, regardless of how, the guttural response of watching another human, have harm inflicted upon them or, that type of thing. I can choose to get lost in that and just blindly attack everybody that doesn't think like me, or I can notice that response is present within me, sit with it, allow it, not judge it, and say, why do I feel this way? And what's behind this situation? Is there anything I can do to change it? I'm recognizing that I have a lot more power than I thought I had before. I have a lot more control over the change that I want to see through my own actions and through being willing to stand up for them. And now for a segment I like to call, this is something that happened that I believe in, but you'll probably find offensive, so my bad. Enjoy. Also, I think any job where you're able to take a life, any position that we've created in society for a person to legally be able to kill another person, be it law enforcement, be it the military, I feel that we should increase the level of education necessary to grant that right. If we're going to make it a right in society, you should have at least a master's degree. Every police officer, if we're going to allow them to shoot someone to death, should have at least a master's degree from an accredited university. And I guarantee the murder rate, the police officer shooting rate, the police officer brutality rate would go down immediately. The Snooze Button Wake Up Show in no way, shape, or form condones killing by profession, trade, or enjoyment in any way other than possibly for food, but that is up for debate among vegans, and we're not going to get into that upon this particular episode. Thank you. You're listening to the Snooze Button Wake Up Weekly Variety Show. I'm your host, Brandon Brand New Stevens, and this week there is a call all across the nation to A, reform the police, B, abolish the police, or C, defund the police. I've been doing a lot of research into what all of these three mean and what they might all look like. There have been protests nationwide about police brutality in general, and mainly white on black systemic racism inherent in not only the judicial system and the laws, but actually inherent in the DNA of what it means to police, as it's come to light that a lot of police forces were designed as runaway slave patrol and as designed to enforce the law and order around these Jim Crow laws. So people are looking at police brutality systemically across the nation. Now, there are calls by some people to completely abolish the police, and that means police are gone. There just aren't police. The idea is that, well, there's lots of different ideas. Some people think communities will police themselves. Some people think that in the absence of all these laws that need to be kept by police who enforce them, people are less likely to actually commit crime. There's all kinds of different ideas. Abolishing the police, in this climate, I don't know about all that. Now, the next one is defunding the police, which is interesting in a lot of ways because police would remain in the community. The role they play is up for debate, though. So a lot of the time, police respond to scenes after the fact that the crime has already been committed. They're there to, collect evidence, take down names, take down information. A lot of the times, you know, it's a domestic situation, a mental health situation, a substance abuse situation that, you know, the police aren't super duper specialists in. I found a very interesting article. My sister-in-law posted it. It's called Confessions of a Former Bastard Cop. It's on medium.com. It's a very interesting read. The gentleman, and I quote, says, "Every police academy is different, but all of them share certain features. Taught by old cops, run like a paramilitary boot camp, strong emphasis on protecting yourself more than anyone else. The majority of my time in the academy was spent doing aggressive physical training and watching video after video after video of police officers being murdered on duty. I want to highlight this. Nearly everyone coming into law enforcement is bombarded with dash cam footage of police officers being ambushed and killed. Over and over and over, colorless VHS video plays footage of cops screaming for help over their radios, their bodies going limp as a pair of taillights speed away into a grainy black horizon. In my case, with commentary from an old racist cop who used to brag about assaulting Black Panthers." End quote. Now, the author of this article highlights the systemic structures behind some of the ideology impressed upon the new Academy of Recruits each year that is reinforced through an internal hierarchical culture of never rat on a fellow officer. Now, this man claims that all cops are tainted by these ideologies to some extent, even if not actively participating in deplorable practices, such as, but not limited to, informal contests for who could cite or arrest someone for the most obscure law, such as DUI on a bicycle, or having a non-regulation number of brooms on your tow truck. Pepper spraying sleeping bags of the homeless so they need to throw them away, planting evidence on suspects such as cocaine or pocket knives, intentionally provoking anger to evoke a response from suspects in order to fight them, seeking to enforce specific crimes only when they line up with city contracts, such as arresting homeless people for stealing aluminum cans from public trash that would count toward expected tonnage the city's waste management company would be compensated for by the government. The author then paints a picture that many police are molded by the following mantra: "I'd rather be judged by 12 than carried by 6. Insinuating it's better to shoot first and take one's chances in court than risk being hurt. This former police officer then wrote, "Many cops fantasize about getting to kill someone in the line of duty, egged on by others that have actually done it. One of my training officers told me about the time he shot and killed a mentally ill homeless man wielding a big stick. He bragged that he slept like a baby that night. Official training teaches you how to be violent effectively, and when you're legally allowed to deploy that violence, but unofficial training teaches you to desire violence, to expand the breadth of your violence without getting caught, it erodes your own compassion for desperate people." End quote. Now, this man isn't claiming that no good comes of police work. However, he does state that when he's done his best work as a cop, it was when doing a mediocre job in roles that he was never trained for, such as a therapist or a social worker. He stated that it was rare for the police to show up in time to actually stop a crime, and said that most of the time they'd arrive after the fact and didn't really need to be armed for the majority of their work. The article is a bit lengthy, but there is lots to ponder in it for anyone seriously questioning the necessity of militarized or armed police, and/or whether or not defunding, abolishing, or reforming police are viable options moving forward. That article again was Confessions of a Former Bastard Cop, written by Officer A. Cab on June 6th, 2020 for Medium.com. And now for another installment of This Is Something That Happened That I Believe In, But You'll Probably Find It Offensive, So... My bad. Enjoy. So my buddy sent me a video of a well-known Jewish YouTuber. I think he's a comedian also. And the guy's argument was, I've heard it a lot. It's, I think, the argument that either most people that just don't care to take a look at the whole Black Lives Matter situation as anything other than a nuisance. I can claim to be kind of like that. You know, I always thought that that was just some kind of annoying thing that other people had to deal with that I didn't need to look at, realizing that I actually played a role in it through, you know, unbeknownst to me, what appears to be a massive advantage, also known by some as white privilege, you know, just through the way some of these laws and systematic structures are in place to keep down people of color. So, you know, this argument from this Jewish YouTuber was basically like, you know, calm down, black people, you're not the only people with trauma, right? And he was going on to talk about all of the pain and stuff that the Jewish people have been through, right? So I wrote back to my friend, because this Jewish YouTuber was saying, like, defunding the police is absolutely ridiculous. He was saying, like, people are calling to abolish the police or defund the police. He said, who's going to keep us safe? You know, he said, who's going to come in and stop the school shooters? Who's going to step in and, you know, when there's trouble in my community, right? Now, I think deep down, a lot of people that maybe subconsciously don't want black people to have the same rights as white people, that don't want black people to be truly equal with white people, because I think a lot of white guilt, whether it's subconscious or conscious, is very afraid of black revenge. I think very few people would admit it, but I think that there's this collective white fear of, if we give, how awful is that? If we give this to them, then what will they do to us with it? What will black people do to white people with equality? Is what those whose lives are built on inequality fear. So I said, you know, yes, the Jewish people have had trauma. Yes, black people have had trauma, but black people are actively having trauma inflicted upon them right now, you know? And I said, I wonder if this gentleman, you know, would have voted to demilitarize the SS during the Holocaust. You know, and that's an extreme example, and I was being a bit of a smartass, but a lot of people see militarized police as just that. The SS of a modern day Holocaust against black people. And again, I'm using, you know, verbiage that is excitatory and antagonistic. I know that's a bit extreme, but there's a lot of similarities between the way Jews were treated and the way blacks were and still are being treated. You know, that Jewish YouTuber guy was saying that, yeah, many people of varying color and ethnicity have trauma, which is true, but when the Jews were being massacred, though it systematically, I might add, though it took a while, eventually, the rest of the world woke up, jumped in, and helped the Jewish people. Well, the black community needs that same help right now. And I found the fact that this guy was highlighting the past struggles of Jewish people, given the current political climate, to be a bit insensitive, self-centered, and dismissive of the current plight of black people. Yes, all lives matter, but until black lives matter enough to make actual change to the system, it seems the cycle will continue. And now for the joke of the variety show. Why did the police arrest the comedian at the protest? Because police brutality is no laughing matter. Well, folks, that's about all the time we have for this week's episode of the Snooze Button Wake Up Weekly Variety Show. I'm your host, Brandon Brand New Stevens. To support this podcast and to see some exclusive never-before-seen material, visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/BRANNUJERZY. Be sure to check out previous episodes, and as always, stay woke, y'all. See you next week.